Hauptsache raus, der Outdoor-Podcast.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen bei Hauptsache raus, dem Podcast des Outdoor-Magazins. Mein Name ist Kerstin Rothart. Ich bin Reiseredakteurin bei Orte schon einige Jahre. Heute habe ich einen ganz besonderen Gast. Das ist der Timothy Olsen. Timothy Olsen ist das Gesicht der diesjährigen EOFT, der European Outdoor Film Tour, die ab 16.10. durch alle großen Städte in Deutschland tourt, aber auch durch 8 Länder in Europa. Es werden 8 Filme gezeigt, vom Leben draußen, vom Speedflying, über Skitrips per Segelschiff in die Arktis bis zu den Bridge Boys, die in der Pandemie Brücken vor der Haustür als Kletterrevier für sich entdeckt haben. Genau, und ich würde jetzt einfach ins Englische wechseln, damit Timothy überhaupt versteht, was ich sage. Hello, Timothy. It's really nice to have you as a guest today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be on. Thank you.
You're a special guest because you're the face of the actual EOFT, the European Outdoor Film Tour. And you have been on the PCT, the Pacific Crest Trail, which is for European measures, 14,265 kilometer long hike. Normal hikers take 5 to 6 months to do it completely. And you were running the whole thing. And your aim was to be better than the actual record. So the first question is, did you like physical education in school already?
Yes, I always enjoyed physical activity. I grew up in a really small town in Wisconsin with less than 1,000 people, and had a nice backyard, so I would run around there plenty. And through growing up in grade school, high school, I really enjoyed sports. Basketball was my favorite sport, and then of course running was something I really enjoyed. And kind of not till later on in life did I really get into trail running and mountain running, and that I really fell in love with just being in nature's and running. So always enjoyed sport, but okay. My trail running experience grew later on in life.
So the enthusiasm started quite early. Most people would consider themselves fit when completing a half marathon. How did you start as a long distance runner?
Yeah, it was just kind of a progression. I've always used exercise and trail running as a way to help my, help like the mental side of things, to help my mental health. And so I always considered getting out for running as kind of just a way to go into my thoughts and kind of, just kind of reassociate to different things that have happened in my life. And being in nature, I feel like allows me to really, tap into just kind of listening and honoring my true self. And then through that exploration, I'm able to go in there and do some healing, some cleaning. And I've always used running like that.
Okay, so it was more a mental thing in the beginning, and after all, a good sport for you as well. How did you prepare and train? And when did you start training for ultras?
I got into ultras when I moved to Ashland, Oregon in 2009. I moved there in 2008, and then 2009 is when I kind of got into trail running. I did, kind of a local 50 kilometer race there. Okay. I guess I just really enjoyed the long distance. And I, like I said before, I kind of used it as like kind of a therapy thing after high school. I made a lot of poor decisions and was kind of having like just yeah, old traumas and things kind of come up in my life. And instead of handling those in a good, healthy way, I decided to just kind of drown them in alcohol, a lot of drugs, and ended up in a really bad place. I didn't take care of my body at all. I was kind of, yeah, I was ready to die in a very depressed way. And so I turned to a lot of self-sabotaging ways of life for a while. And after ending up in jail and after just having a lot of challenges in life that I felt really, you know, just hurt and not in a good mental place. And so I used running as a way to kind of to clean my system out, to quit using and drinking lots of alcohol and taking lots of drugs. And so I used running as a way to kind of to clean my body out and to purify. And then I guess through time, after kind of I cleaned myself up, I got into coaching cross country and track at my local high school. And that's where I like got into running again. And it was kind of funny where it turned into just wanting to help coach, you know, some kids across country. And it turned into, I was having so much fun, you know, making games for making running fun for them. I made it fun for myself again. And, running became a beautiful vehicle to, like I was saying before, to kind of go in, to my subconscious and do that inner work, that has been really beneficial for changing my life and flipping it around.
It's quite a hard change from nearly drinking too much for a good life to a real proper runner. That's quite interesting, and it's a hard way. Congratulations that you managed that. That's really cool. How long was your longest trail before you ran the PCT then?
I've done a lot of 100 mile races, and some of those 100 mile races are longer. Like I've done UTMB a few times where that's, you know, maybe 107 miles. I've done some this run in Colorado called Run Rabbit Run that was 110 miles. And so the longest I've kind of done is 100 mile racing. And then I've done some kind of bigger treks where I've done 200 mile called the Snowman Trek in Bhutan, where I did a FKT on that prior to the Pacific Crest Trail. And and then I kind of, you know, kind of wanted to switch from racing all the time. And I really love racing and all the community and stuff around that. But after spending so much time on the trails through hiking and doing longer distance trails, has really, caught my eye and my heart. And the more I spent time on the Pacific Crest Trail, for me, it was a really beautiful place to do some healing and to just really connect with nature, connect with myself. And, through that process, I decided that I knew that running the whole Pacific Crest Trail was something that I really wanted to do. And so the training for it, it wasn't just, you know, one day I decided I'm going to run the PCT and started training like I would for 100 miles. I kind of feel like the running the Pacific Crest Trail was like an accumulation of, you know, over 10 plus years of training. Yep. And dedication to the sport, that when this came up, I think I had to really utilize my strength and perseverance and all the skills and knowledge I learned throughout the many years of trail running and, you know, having good wins and course records, and also having, you know, not finishing and DNFing and having injuries and struggling with that. And so I've learned a lot over the years of racing. And so wanted to do this really big, long trail that I always had my eye on.
Yeah. So you started as a hiker for the PCT. Did I stand that right? You knew the trail, and then you decided, oh, this should be a good run.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
where I lived in Ashland, Oregon, the trail from my house actually eventually connected with the Pacific Crest Trail.
Okay. Okay.
And then through that process, I helped put on a race on the Pacific Crest Trail in Ashland, Oregon called the Siskiyou Outback. And so I, through that process, I had a lot of time of working on the trails, of cleaning and taking care of the trails, of being a trail angel, where being a trail angel is where you like, you leave some food for other thru hikers and maybe even hang out and encourage them and stuff like that. And I think through the process of just spending so much time on the Pacific Crest Trail and in that area, I really wanted to do the whole, you know, continuous effort all the way from Mexico to Canada. And so it was really beautiful that there was a lot of sections on the PCT that I've spent time on, and I've done some races on, I've helped clean up, I've, you know, worked on the trails, and so like the whole process was really meaningful to see the whole West Coast and the whole Pacific Crest Trail.
But did you fully understand the boldness of your run before you ran in the beginning?
Yeah, I don't know to answer that honestly.
Because you knew the trail, you know, ultras, but to put those two things together is another league, I think.
Yeah, most definitely. I was definitely moments where I was out of my league, and you know, it's just like switching it. Like, you know, you can go run 100 miles and you learn how to take care of yourself and fuel properly and, you know, and recover and take care of yourself. But when you go in something like this, you know, it's not something that you can completely train for, where I did some training where I did like, you know, 50 miles a day for a week, beforehand training. But then when you actually get there and you're all of a sudden on day 20 and, you know, you're in completely new territory that you've never experienced, and it could get really overwhelming. And so there was, I mean, even day two of the thing, you know, I remember being pretty dehydrated and just like, wow, I bit off more than I can chew. And yeah, where I didn't really trust, you know, that that I was out doing what I was supposed to be doing and just kind of following that purpose and passion. Yeah. And and learning a lot along the way of like really being adaptable. Okay. And learning that I messed up, you know, during certain times, but that I could, you know, remain focused and keep marching.
I see. And what was a typical day like, getting up in the morning and then start running? Or?
Yeah. So, I mean, just kind of like I do in life, I try to start my day kind of the night before of where I'm going to sleep, of, you know, trying to get a little fuel in and try to get a few hours of sleep. And so it was really challenging to get sleep when your body is so achy and shaky and spasmy and all kinds of different things that were happening internally in my body. But I would, you know, I would try to get a few hours of sleep and then wake up and, you know, my mind would be like, don't do this, you know, just like quit now. and so it was like learning to turn off my mind. And, you know, I did like a pea protein drink every morning. And so I just, you know, get some protein in, pack up my bag, and then just start walking. And so then I'd start walking, you know, nice and sore. And then normally a mile or two into each day, I would just take a moment to sit down on a rock or find some place where I could just, you know, pause for a second and meditate, and kind of like, sometimes I'd do like a little breath work to kind of like, you know, activate my systems a little bit and wake up. And, and then I would just kind of connect with nature. I would, you know, take a few breaths and almost like in prayer, just kind of just listen to nature, listen to the intuition that, you know, how I was supposed to move forward that day. And then really just, you know, get up, decide that I was going to be focused for the next, you know, 15 hours or so, you know, roughly it was probably 15 to 17 hours a day of hiking, running pretty continuously. Where I'd see my crew, you know, sometimes a handful of times a day or a few times during the day, and I'd get restocked on food or water. You know, half the time I had to kind of pack, I'd see them later on the day, I would take a bigger pack, with like a little bit sleeping gear in. And so sometimes I would just, sleep out in nature.
And that would be my next question. Where did you spend the nights, and how could you bring your things for sleeping bag, or I don't know, a small tent? I don't think you had a small tent, but
no.
Something to sleep in you had to bring there.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was definitely challenging. And, you know, I probably would have changed the way I did it a little bit. But like for me, I had, you know, I did it supported. So I had my crew mm-hmm. who had like an RV, and they would drive. And, you know, over half the time I would get to sleep in the RV. And so I would actually push an extra few miles, or I would cut the day a little bit shorter to spend the night in the RV and maybe get 4 hours of sleep. But the other half of the time, I would just sleep out in nature. And what that would be is I'd bring a tiny little sleeping bag that was in my backpack, and then a small little bivy that I just looked like a little wrapped up burrito on the side of the road, on the side of the trail. And so I just kind of pull over, you know, later in the day, 10, 11 o'clock at night, and then try to get a little food in. And get
how
some
much
sleep.
Did you carry? How much did it weight?
Yeah. Backpack? That's a good question.
In the average, because you said you sometimes had a bit more when you met your crew or got rid of things.
Yeah. I would say probably 10 to 20 pounds. So maybe.
All right.
Yeah.
5 to 10 kilos should be.
About 5 to 10 kilograms, you know, more a little bit on the heavier nights, because it kind of depends. So sometimes I would, and how I did it a lot, because doing it supported, is I would hike for, you know, most of the day or something with a smaller pack and not carrying my night stuff. And then when possible, I would, you know, meet my crew, and then I'd grab a bigger pack. And so then it would, you know, my pack would double in weight. And that was just carrying a little extra, some night gear, like some warmer
clothes. Could you plan these meeting points, or
for some of it. And then sometimes it turned into days at a time, like going through the Sierras. That was like a 5 day stretch where I didn't see my crew, and I had to carry more. Cause like going through, the Sierras, you have to carry a bear canister, to keep your food in. Cause there's
a bear canister and all the food.
Yep. And all the food. During those times, it was much heavier. And, you know, so I would have a 4 or 5 day stretch with that. And then I'd get done with that. And then I'd have a couple days where I was, you know, meeting up my crew. And then I was doing a lighter pack. And that always, you know, was relieving to have a lighter pack. But then, you know, you're a little scared sometimes if you're going to have. And yeah, definitely. Like, I didn't have enough equipment or enough water sometimes in storms or through really hot sections.
What about water? Can you drink out of the creeks? Or
yeah, so I brought a filter with me. And so, you know, in the beginning, I was carrying a lot more water. So I'd bring like a big reservoir plus, you know, so I'd bring 2 to maybe 4 liters of water in my pack, like especially leaving in the morning and it was going to be really hot. I'd carry a lot of water. But then when we got, especially Oregon and and Washington especially had a lot of river crossings. And there I just had like a little simple filter on my water bottles that I would fill it up and I would just filter it and drink that. And so then I didn't have to carry as much. And even like the last like 5 days, I just had a couple handheld water bottles with a filter like strapped onto it. And so I'd fill in the creek and do that.
Okay.
And then the same thing with food. Like I brought lots of calories and so, you know, I loved when I could see my crew and I'd get normal, you know, some hash browns, pancakes,
the good stuff.
Yeah, the good stuff. Some meat and potatoes and eggs.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it was definitely getting as many calories as possible. And a thing that I haven't shared a lot was because I was running so much and just like, I feel like, and you're putting all these calories in, my mouth was very acidic. So I had like blisters on my tongue and sores in my mouth like the whole time. And so food did not taste very good pretty much the whole time. Like I knew I was like a machine out there where I was just filling up my body with calories. Yep. I was trying to be, you know, as mindful as possible of what I was putting in to my body and how it affects the earth and stuff. But I was getting just calories in, and you know, there was stops of just getting ice cream and
in the end it's the calories that count, huh?
yeah. And then like when you're going hiking, of just like, you know, minimal stuff. So I was, you know, doing some powders of you know, just like a protein powder drink for in the morning. Mm-hmm. And then just like a lot of Snickers bars. It was like definitely my highlight was the almond Snickers bars. Yeah. But then my teeth hurt too, because you're eating so much sugar and stuff that like my teeth was hurting from all the sweets. So it was a very interesting relationship with the food, but coming to the sense of just like really needing good dense calories when I could get good whole foods, that was, you know, really helpful. But sometimes it was just kind of like trail snacks and trail food.
Of course, it's an extreme situation, so you can't cook your meal in a surrounding and have your fun, but you have to get your calories in a way.
Totally. And then when I camped through the night too, I didn't bring any like a heater or anything like that. I just like ate cold food, but whatever I could carry with me. And then I was really, you know, doing the, being supported. I would meet my crew and get food at certain points.
I see. What was the average distance every day, and how many vertical meters can you sell out?
That's a great question. I know it's on there. In the movie, it's got all those facts. I ran, I think, like averaged 51 miles a day. So, you know, over 80 kilometers a day. But then, you know, so in some days, like when I kind of had an injury for a few weeks, I was going slower. And so that was more... 40 miles or something like that. And
which is still quite enough.
Like when I was completely injured, where I probably should have stopped for like a month and like healed, I kept going. And then there was times like, you know, where I did like 65 miles was my highest day. But I did a lot of 60 mile days too. And I just kind of, I took whatever the terrain gave me. Sometimes the terrain was really steep and rocky and lots of down trees, and it was a little bit slower day. And then, you know, some days I'd hit a little bit more smoother terrain, or the weather would be a little bit more, you know, not as hot or wild in whatever way. And so I try to get more miles those days and just really feel into my body. Is just like, you know, and when I felt like I could go farther, I would try to go farther. And when there was some really low moments, I would try to just like, you know, stop and rest a little bit, just stop at the side of the trail and meditate for a little bit to try to get my mind in a good place and, you know, to be out there. Cause there was moments where I was like, it was really painful and hard and challenging, and deciding, you know, why am I out here doing it? It wasn't
But did you never think of giving up, of saying, okay, enough is enough, I'm fed up, stop?
Definitely had moments where that thought would creep in, and I think it was more of just like I wouldn't allow it. Like I knew there would be resistance. Like, you know, you're gonna have mental, physical, emotional resistance come up, and it's gonna come in all different ways, and it's gonna try to hit you from every angle. And so you just had to be prepared of like, okay, today's gonna be more of a mental day, and your mind's telling you, give up. Why are you doing this? This is stupid. And then you have other days where it's more physical. You're just really hurting and you're really tired and you just really had to kind of flow with the highs and lows of that and not let your mind trick you into giving up. And I think that's where I really leaned on the support of my family and just, you know, thinking of all the people that support me in life. I really thought of them and wanted to do
that's
this.
Kind of motivation, your family, and to think of the people who accompanied you and did the whole thing for you, so you didn't want to disappoint them and yourself.
Did
you run all alone all the time?
Most of the time, I like, because with my crew that I had, you know, they were helping with so much logistics of like, you know, trying to go find water and food and be ready for, you know, the next spot. And my wife was 8 months pregnant. And she couldn't run. And I was really blessed that I had like my coach who, you know, helps has helped me over the last few years with some coaching of with running. He came out there and was supportive, and he would run really big sections. And like the last, like, cause the trail or Canada was closed, and the trails, cause there was fires around, it was really hard to get to Canada at the end.
Oh my God.
So he actually hiked with me the last few days, you know, to get there and to witness it, to record some of it and to encourage me. And then I had other really cool friends, like, in the ultra running community, I have so many awesome friends that, Dylan Bowman was a buddy that came out, Dom Grossman, Billy Yang. So I had like these friends.
They did parts, of the PCT with you.
Yeah. Just like 10 or 20 mile sections. Mm-hmm. I never had anyone do really big sections, but I had, or for days, just cause you know, everyone has their own life and whatnot. But I had friends come out for a few days at a time. Like my brother came out and he was there for like, you know, 4 or 5 days, and he ran with me. He ran with me a few days for just, you know, a few hours each day. So not like like out of the 15 hours or 17 hours of a day, it was maybe an hour or two, you know, a handful of times throughout the thing. So it really was a lot of alone time. But I really cherish those moments when I did get to run with friends or family. And even when I'd get to the different crew spots, my two sons, Tristan and Kai were out there, and they would normally hike or run up like a mile with me, you know, every day that we would meet up. I would try to get some time with my family out on the trail and, just take a moment to not go as fast and, you know, just check in how they're doing and check in their curiosity of like the different animals that they've spotted. And we do homeschooling too. So we were reusing the trail as a really great way to be curious and to be educated on the different, ecosystems, national parks, just, you know, everything that we were going through the three different states.
You did some school lessons as well.
Yeah.
That's quite interesting. Yeah. And how many pairs of shoes did you need to complete the whole way?
I think we counted and it was like 7 or 8 of them.
So okay.
7 or 8. Yeah. And I definitely, there was probably like three different pairs of Adidas Terrex shoes that like I would, three different models, sorry, that I was using of one, you know, one had like this boa system so I could just kind of strap it up really quickly. One had a little bit more cushion. One was a little bit more like lightweight that it would drain better through when I was going through creeks and stuff like that. So I would use those different shoes.
But they were all worn in the end.
Yeah, they were all worn in the end. Yep. Okay. The two ultra shoes, they had like they had holes on the side.
Oh my God.
I saved one pair of shoes, like the last pair that I finished in.
Okay.
And the special ones. Yeah, it's like one that I have a pair of when I set the course record at Western States a long time ago. I have that pair of shoes, and so it's just a couple shoes throughout my career that I save, and that's one of them. And I wrote the name of my daughter who was going to be born, like exactly a month after we finished, my daughter was born. And so I wrote her name on my shoes, and I felt like I felt like she was encouraging me and basically pulling me to the finish.
I see. What a nice idea. You mentioned any injuries. Was it the biggest difficulty, and what kind of injuries did you have during the way?
So there was definitely one really major injury would be my right shin. And that one was almost turning into like compartment syndrome, where I was really nervous about what my leg was doing. And I was nervous that it might never be the same. And I was really blessed to have a friend of mine that I went to massage school with, and he came out. He's a chiropractor now, and he was doing some adjustments and just some work on my leg, and that seemed to keep it usable. But there was a few weeks where it was really hard. That shin was probably the hardest, between that and then like some knee and some calf issues were the hardest. But I was, you know, probably from day 2 on, I had injuries that you know, a normal person would not run for the day. And it was kind of just the, like, you know, it's like I've done races where I've ran 100 miles or 50 mile race and I run it really hard. And then I normally take a week or two off, like completely to heal. And so I was, you know, doing a race every day. It wasn't like, it wasn't an easy 50 miles. It was, I wish I could. Climbing wise, I probably climbed 10,000 plus feet a day at least. I think in all it was like, it's like 500,000 feet I climbed or something like that. I can't remember. I think it was like 16 Mount Everest is what I like climbed. I think we said that in the movie. I don't know all the exact, but it was like, you know, the terrain was really hard and you just kind of, like I said before, you had to take whatever it gave you. So some days were a little flatter and you would get out some more miles, and some days were really mountainous and tons of trees. The trees are something that I didn't, with COVID and everything going on, we were trying to be really, you know, cautious of going through towns and not communicating with a lot of people. Hence why I wasn't running with a lot of people all the time, and just trying to keep the kind of the bubble of our team, our immunity strong. And even like, you know, my kids got sick a few times on there, and we just kind of, you know, it worked out that I was just out on the trail sleeping, so I wasn't by them. But, you know, I was trying to keep my immune system as strong as possible through the whole experience.
I see. Did you meet wild animals, bears? You mentioned you had to carry a bear canister. So did you meet any?
Yeah. I saw a few bears. All the bears that I ran into, I mean, every animal that I saw eventually either just ignored me or ran away. I had a lot of bear encounters and mountain lion
encounters. Mountain lion as well.
Okay. Yeah, I probably saw like 5 of them, and a few of them were really intimidating. There was one time in Oregon where I came across the biggest mountain lion I've ever seen, and it was probably one of the highlights of my experience out there. Of, you know, I've been.
But it hasn't been dangerous. They just ran off when you reached.
Yep. They all
lucky let you.
Me. Yeah, exactly. I felt very blessed to go through there and not have any animals. Just even the amount of rattlesnakes that I had to jump over and almost bite me and stuff like that. That was a daily thing for the first half of, you know, going through the Mojave Desert and the different hotter sections of the PCT. There was a lot of, a lot of rattlesnakes. And then, you know, just so beautiful, just seeing everything. I got to see so many, you know, owls and eagles and hawks. And
this is quite nice. Okay. Not of any danger normally.
Really, I mean, there was definitely the dangerous ones and ones that I, you know, needed to be more cautious of. But then just, you know, just this overall, like, sense of, like, nature was really allowing me to pass through and, like, you know, beforehand of really setting the intention of asking permission to come through here and to not be, you know, to work in harmony with nature. And it wasn't me against nature or me against the mountains. It was connecting and moving in harmony and reciprocity with the land. And
that might be the better attitude to it.
I felt like it was the
like
right
a war
mindset
between you and the nature or you and the PCT, but you're part of it and enjoying it in a way as good as it's possible with a race like that.
Yeah. I mean, that's what when I pause and think back on it now, I feel just so grateful for all the beautiful creation of nature that I got to see and just witness it, you know, from such a far distance at, you know, all different lights and different times of day where you get to just see, you know, nature doing its thing and healing and growing and reproducing and dying and decaying and then life coming from that. It was so beautiful to just watch nature in all of its, you know, glory do its thing and just kind of be a witness, a passerby as you watch nature
do
its thing.
So from when to when did you do the challenge?
It was from June 1st to July, I want to say like 22nd or 21st.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So in In the summertime when the conditions are best.
Yep. Normally. For me, it was hot in the beginning, you start, like I started in June, so that the snow in the Sierras would melt. The snow in the Sierras doesn't melt until like July or like late June, July.
So and, we're a bit too early.
Yeah. And so I didn't want to be early because then all of a sudden you need an ice axe and you have to be, you know, traversing big, you know, snow fields and so I was trying to negate that. And then you also got to deal with all the river crossings as you get, you know, all the snow is melting in the high country. There can be some pretty dangerous river crossings. And there was a few jumps that I had to make over some boulders. And I was, you know, those were some of the happiest moments where I couldn't believe I made that jump. And I was in the middle of complete nowhere that if I fell in that stream and got washed down, no one would have saw me again. And Ooh. So there was moments out there where you're like, wow, this is really raw. This is really, I'm out here.
And okay, yeah, you're out there on your own. And did you meet a really, really bad weather as well? Heavy rains storms?
One could say that I was pretty lucky with my weather, but I don't know. So I was hitting 110 degrees, 107, 110 degrees in the beginning, and that was really awful. I don't even know what that is in Celsius. 30 plus.
Oh my God.
but like it was, you know, it was really high and really hot. And that was super challenging. And then we had a bunch of fires. And so like there was a lot of smoke and the air quality was bad. And then there was storms, you know, I got stormed on. There was a few like scary moments where I was, you know, I felt either kind of sick or I felt really like hypothermic and cold. In some sections when I was like in the Sierras getting stormed on. But I also like I was moving well enough that I missed a lot of storms, and I've been in much scarier weather situations in the mountains than I experienced on the PCT. And so I felt really blessed of course there was weather. Of course there was big rainstorms and stuff like that, but
nothing too bad.
Nothing that scared me in a way. Like there was, you know, a few days like where I woke up at, you know, at like 11,000 feet right before Muir Pass. And it was a big storm at like 3 a.m. And I, you know, only got a couple hours of sleep, probably only like an hour of sleep that night, and woke up in a big storm. And because I was, you know, just sleeping in my little burrito, it wasn't rainproof. And so, you know, it's those moments of like this big storm's there. And I decided to just throw everything in my pack as, you know, all wet as best I could and hike. I hiked for, you know, an hour until I got out of that storm. Mm-hmm. And then kind of reassess things. But there was just moments like that where the only choice was to keep moving. And I've learned that in running where like you're getting hypothermic and stuff, like you need to keep moving if you can to stay warm. And I packed in those ways where I packed light that if I wasn't moving efficiently and something happened, it could have been problems. I did have a tracker on me. I had like this spot tracker on me that I could, you know, pressed an SOS button to get evacuated if there was like really dangerous problems. But for the most part, nature was very kind to me and let me pass with not too much wild weather.
Yeah, you were lucky, and maybe it was the right way to start with the meditation.
Yeah,
to get the friendly spirits of it. Maybe you did exactly the right thing. At the finish, what did it feel like? Relief or no, it's over?
Yeah, I think like accumulation of like all the emotions throughout the whole thing. It was everything and more that I could have anticipated or expected. Like the last, you know, miles were hard, and I had no clue how I was going to get out of Canada once I reached there. My legs were so sore, and that shin and calf was really bothering me towards the end. But like I got there and I like, you know, thank God, thanked nature for allowing me to make it all the way there. And And then I let out this roar of, I think, just kind of purging just all the stuck emotion that was, like, you know, that I bottled up, that I've, yeah, over, like, over my whole lifetime, I feel like I just let out a roar of releasing, you know, struggles, challenges, disappointments, and with that too, of joy, elation, bliss, of like just feeling it all. Like it felt, you know, like winning a race, and it felt like just coming to a completion of like complete relief of like, I did this and I don't have to, you know.
Okay, well, so it's I would say I don't have to walk again. Everything inside.
Yeah. Yeah, it just released a lot. And I think I just was able to like allow that big release, and then just to give a lot of thanks, to be really grateful for my family, for the whole team that helped me. I think like my words after that were like, you know, it wasn't just me. I didn't do this myself. It was like, of course, you know, I moved my legs every step of that way. But, you know, for my family supporting me, just all the people online like cheering for me, my teammates, my coach, just I felt a lot of love and connection from people all over the world. And when I finished that, it felt like everyone was there with me, and that like we got to celebrate that.
It's not only your triumph, it's the triumph of the whole team, of your family and your friends and everyone who supported you. And you managed to set up the new record.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got the
congratulations
record.
Again.
Thank you.
That's great. So can you give me the exact time you managed to?
It's a great question. I can't.
I will look it up.
Yeah,
it must be so present that you can just tell me.
Yeah, I know it's 51
days. I can look it up.
It's
not a problem.
51 days and some hours, but I don't know exactly what it was. It's really funny that I don't know.
Okay. How long did it take after reaching your goal before you felt the urge to go running again?
Whew. Yeah, it probably took 3 weeks, maybe, and probably
weeks.
Like,
okay.
Yeah, like 3 weeks. Like those first 2 weeks afterwards were super hard and challenging to recover and get the body back back into like somewhat of a homeostasis. Like
how much weight did you lose during the PCT?
Another great question. Probably like, you know, Not much, like 10.
Not much.
I think I went into it too skinny. I probably lost 10, you know, 10 to 15 pounds, 10 pounds.
Okay.
But like my body did not look as deteriorated as I thought. And as other people, I've seen other people do long distance things. And I really felt like I ate really well throughout. And of course I was skinny. Like I had a six pack and like, my muscles were sticking out, and like there's this really good picture out there of my wife, 8+ months pregnant, and me at the end.
And the skinny man.
Yeah. And so it was like, she was growing and I was shrinking. And so the juxtaposition of that was, hilarious and beautiful, of watching my, you know, wife growing and, you know, producing, making this beautiful baby, and then me kind of deteriorating and kind of healing through.
That's quite an interesting contrast between the two of you then.
It was definitely a contrast for sure.
So just have one more question. What is next besides the EOFT? What is your next plans?
That's a good question.
You don't know yet?
I have thoughts of doing some other long trails. But yeah, I think more so, continuing to do the things that we're doing. We put on these retreats called Run Mindful Retreats.
I've seen it on your website. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think so through the years of doing all these long distance things, I have felt the need, to go more into like some integration coaching for this. So there's people that, you know, are getting for a race. And so kind of helping them coach them through the process of preparation and getting ready for a race or some big life event, and then the activation of that actually happening, and then and then the integration afterwards of like, sometimes you go and do this, this big race, the biggest thing you've ever done, and everything goes perfect. And like for me, like you accomplish the PCT, you win a race or something like that. But then there's also moments where you DNF the race and you didn't finish, or you get injured, and it can really spiral you into a depressed, lonely, confusing spot. And so I've been doing more internal work, and
turn more to coaching now.
More to coaching and breath work. I've been doing facilitating breath work and meditations, and using that to help people integrate big life experiences. Like, you do a 100-mile race, and instead of just doing 100-mile race and then having all those emotions and stuff, and just, drinking, a handful of pints and going on to the next day just sore, like actually integrating the process of like, what was your aim? Why were you doing this? Mm. And then was it just to accomplish something and pat yourself on the back, or was it to like do some more deeper work? And so, really feeling called to do more of that. And then I also have a few, some bigger, longer trail projects of just like, we've lived in Colorado. So like the Colorado Trail is one. We've also lived in Oregon, and there's a trail that goes along the whole Oregon coast that I've thought of running and documenting, and more so I just want to really share some beautiful places in this world and show how we can, go and see them, on bike or on foot, and how like those adventures into nature can be life-changing moments and really inspire us to keep evolving and being evolving into our best selves.
I see. So your plans are both a bit of doing the retreats but not stopping to run. That's great news. Maybe we talk to each other again when you have your next big thing completed. Thank you a lot for the nice talk we had. And hope we talk to each other again. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for having me on the show. And it was great talking with you.
Thank you. Wenn euch unser Podcast gefällt und ihr keine Episode mehr verpassen möchtet, dann abonniert uns doch gerne gleich hier oder auch unseren Newsletter auf outdoor-magazin.com. Natürlich findet ihr uns auch gedruckt am Kiosk oder bei Abo in eurem Briefkasten und klar auch auf Facebook und Instagram. Und das Interview mit Timothy Olsen findet ihr auch in gedruckter Form in der Outdoor 1222, die am 8.11. am Kiosk liegt. Bis bald hier oder draußen auf Tour.
Hauptsache raus, der Outdoor-Podcast.